Here we go. It's another edition of the 50-50 podcast. The 50-50 podcast presented by Physical Athletics, our proud partners, Physical Athletics. For those of you in the Borderland region, you can find them at 2270 Joe Battle Boulevard. You can also find them on all social media platforms at Physical Athletic. That's F-Y-Z-I-C-A-L Athletic, as well as on their website at physicalathletics.com. My next guest, he's a coach I'm a big fan of, had the opportunity to meet before, attend one of his training sessions a few years back. I know he had the unfortunate pleasure of being pestered by me, but he is the head women's soccer coach of UTSA, University of Texas San Antonio, Coach Derek Pittman. Coach, how are you?
I am well, sir. Hector, thanks for having me on. I appreciate you pestering me to get me on here. That's I'm looking forward to having a chat with you.
Absolutely. You can run, but you can't hide, Coach. Now we're excited to have you on. You're here with us for what can kind of seem like a very, lip service buzzword, whatever you want to call it, right? Just in terms of that word culture, right? I know it's something we're both very passionate about. Something that you and I had on a previous phone conversation. We had a great conversation. I kind of told you I wish we were recording at that point the conversation we had. But we're going to talk about, you know, you're just completed your third season there at UTSA. We're going to look at culture, how you've been able to establish that, and the importance of what really sits behind that, right? The consistency, the communication, and the core values that help, you know, create that culture. But before we begin, Coach, talk to us a little bit in terms of, you know, your background, how you kind of came to arrive at UTSA and your time there so far.
Yeah, no, thanks, Hector. A little bit of a different story. I mean, if you will, I was fortunate enough growing up playing soccer as a youth player, very recreational up until I entered my junior year, actually, of high school. Up until then, I'd played basketball. I'd played football. My brother's actually a professional race car driver. It's a whole nother discussion. So I had the fortunate opportunity to just kind of, my parents, very blessed in the fact that they shoved us into a little bit of everything and really tried to help foster that environment of competitiveness. And so as got picked up on a club team in the Tulsa, Oklahoma area. And from there really propelled my love and my enthusiasm, my passion for the game. I was fortunate enough to have a club coach, Keith Eddy, who played in the NASL and all the old days of playing for the New York Cosmos, played with Pelé and top players. And he just really instilled in our entire group and our entire team that love for the game and that passion. And so from there, I was fortunate enough to go on and play at the University of Tulsa under Randy Waldrum, great, great coach who's now at Pitt, won national championships at Notre Dame. Again, another great mentor and coach that fueled my passion for the game. And then eventually got into coaching, broke in as a graduate assistant on the men's side at the University of Tulsa for a couple of years under Tom McIntosh, who's still the head coach there at Tulsa, and then switched over to the women's side in 2003, where I got my first assistant job, full-time assistant job at the University of Georgia. And from there, it's just kind of been a couple different treks to the University of Missouri, Arkansas State, out to the Northwest, Gonzaga, Idaho, and now here in San Antonio. And along that path, if you will, definitely have had a lot of mentors, a lot of colleagues that have been willing to invest in me and, share their knowledge, share their, passion for the game and so on and so forth. And you mentioned the culture piece, and that's, I think, is what I love the most, is the ability, love the game, love to coach the game, love to see the success on the field, but that opportunity to help young people, develop as people, if you will, as individuals is really, really cool. And to see a collective group of diverse individuals come together to achieve a bigger goal is fantastic.
Absolutely. And that's, That's Coach Randy Waldrum, 50-50 podcast alum, I might add. He was actually one of our very first guests. So
yeah. Randy's fantastic.
Great guy. We were lucky to have him on. So Coach, you just wrapped up what has to be without a doubt the most, you know, awkward, unorthodox, not normal, insert whatever adjective you want to use, soccer season, right? Nothing in the fall. And then you competed in the spring, had a spring season that you just wrapped up. What was that in terms of just you, your staff? You know, you kind of give us a little bit of a behind the scenes look from the coaching staff perspective, but then also your team. What was that like this spring?
That's a great question. To be honest with you, it even started back in the summer because we all knew to some extent what we were dealing with from, you know, the pandemic. We knew that there was a ton of uncertainty. We tried to continue as if it was kind of a phrase within our team that we're just as if we're going to keep playing. And so even when we got together, you know, all of our athletes returned to campus in July, started their summer, you know, workouts with our strength coach. And the constant question was, are we going to play? Are we going to play? And we just kept taking it, just telling our athletes, we got to take it day by day. And so even getting into preseason, up until about a week to 10 days into preseason, we thought we were still going to be playing. And in fact, we're close to playing a couple exhibition matches. Those got kind of put on pause, and then ultimately everything got halted and pushed to the spring when it was finally announced. And it wasn't easy. It was difficult, I think, for all of us as coaches, as players. And again, I know we were not unique in this, as all of us trying to navigate what that looked like. You know, we wanted to play a couple games in the fall, if at all possible, because I thought it would really give our players something to look forward to feel like they were training for a purpose, not just what was potentially going to happen in the spring, because we knew that that was no guarantee. And so I think the biggest challenge, we made some massive headway when it came to our playing style, implementing our game model, doing a lot of the things from a soccer perspective, what we wanted to accomplish. But I think the thing that was most challenging and a bit different to, really, in all honesty, navigate was the mental and emotional health and well-being of our athletes. Because of that mindset that we're not going to get to play games, you know, coaches out here pushing us hard to continue growing and continue improving. And they're like, wait a minute, we're not going to be playing games for 4 months. So, you know, they didn't want to get burnt out. And we tried to find, but the problem was in that was that we were trying to find ways to do team chemistry events, do different team bonding opportunities, but we couldn't do it because of social distancing. We couldn't get together in it indoors. The only time we were allowed to be together and within 6 feet of each other was when we were practice. And so, you know, even then when the kids would go back to their apartments, they were told to stay in their apartments, just stay with the people that you're rooming with or stay in the dorms. And it was challenging and really took a toll on them physically from an emotional and a mental standpoint. And so that was where it all began. And, you know, fortunately for us, we were able to push a little bit of a pause button towards the end of October. Everybody left for Thanksgiving and didn't come back until January. So that really helped that they were able to go home. They were able to be around their family because none of our players had seen their family from pretty much 4th of July until the 1st of November. And, you know, the parents couldn't come in to visit, et cetera, et cetera. And it just created a lot of different challenges and struggles that none of us were really, really prepared to deal with. And not to mention the fact that we had all been in isolation in our dorms and our homes, all the, you know, we're trying to do these things over Zoom. And, you know, of course, I'm not the most techie person, so we'd be doing something over Zoom and it would break down. So, and, you know, I'm trying to watch film and doing film prep and trying to teach tactics. And that, you know, that created a lot of comical relief for the team for sure. But we tried to come up with new ways to, even we did a couple Zooms with our nutritionist to be able to have competitions of them cooking in their dorms or cooking in their apartment. So you try to come up. We had a movie night outside on our field where we put up a sheet on a goal and watched. I think it was like Finding Nemo or something, you know, and they were all excited. So we tried to find creative ways to do things like that and to be able to keep our players connected. And I would say sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't. But as we went into January, it was definitely different. We had about 10 days to prepare for our first game. And so just navigating the periodization of that, we felt that we have a phrase within our team that we call it, you know, Carl Goody, my assistant, has stolen this, is availability equals winnability. So in the sense of if our players aren't healthy or if our best players aren't healthy, it definitely damages our opportunity to win. And so we wanted to make sure we were doing everything we possibly could to ease our players in, have a bit more of an acclimation period as they got back onto the field, and that we didn't overextend some of our athletes. I mean, the number one thing was we wanted to be playing well in conference. And to be honest with you, as we look back at film from this season, even in comparisons to the strides we made forward in 19 and even in 2018, my first year, the soccer we're playing is fantastic. It's quality. We missed a few pieces in the sense we just did not have the touch in front of goal this season. We created more chances, more quality chances this season. And this is not just subjective. This is our objective data that we get from and keep up the quality of goals that we were or quality of chances in front of goal that we were creating. We just weren't putting in the back of the net. And so we struggled. We fought through. I mean, in one of our games, we outshot an opponent 14-1 and we lost 1-0 on a penalty. So it's those types of games that we were having. It seemed like we were a bit snake bit or a little bit bad luck. But I'm a firm believer you make your own luck. But our players did a phenomenal job, in my opinion, over the spring. Once we got into playing games, them feeling comfortable, them feeling energized back into the environment was really, really exciting. And again, the results didn't go the way that we had hoped, but I feel like we laid a really strong foundation. Returning a big portion of our roster into next season is really something to look forward to.
Yeah, that's a lot of good stuff there. A lot of good stuff. And we'll come back to some of that in a bit, Coach. But one of the things I kind of wanted to pick your brain while I have you here is I know, you know, obviously, you know, the NCAA men's and women's soccer tournament, Division I women's soccer tournament just wrapped up. Right. And the College Cup just concluded yesterday with two incredible games. This wrapped up with the men's championship between Indiana and your Conference USA, their fellow Marshall.
Yeah.
And, in an incredible game. Kind of wanted to pick your brain. What were your thoughts on kind of the tournament? You know, you expanded on the season a little bit in terms of from the UTSA perspective, but kind of in talking with other coaches, you know, what was their take? What do you think in terms of the season, the tournament, and then kind of highlight those national championship games last night?
Yeah, that's a great question, because actually, I'm on a committee with a bunch of other coaches in our league or across the country, I should say, in different conferences, about us talking about what does it look like? What can we learn from COVID? What can we learn from this pandemic season and that week that are positives? And I think a lot of us are in full agreement. We need to take some steps forward and seeing if we can expand our season. I know that a lot of us are looking at what does that look like? I think very few athletic directors, very few are in support of maybe the two semester model, the year long model. But if we can expand our season by a couple weeks on the front end or the back end potentially, and, you know, whether it be a little bit into July and into December, you know, to be able to stretch it, because what we learned from this season was a lot of us were able to play single game weekends, to where it was just we were focused on one opponent, one game. Right. Gave us more time to prepare, but it also gave our student athletes overall a better opportunity to recover from a previous game, their health and wellness, their overall student athlete welfare being able to manage travel, all of those things, and not having to play Friday, Sunday, or even Thursday, Sunday formats and trying to recover. We learned a lot of positive things about that. And I know that we're hoping to take some steps forward in the coming years to be able to expand that season model in the fall to benefit all of us. And so that's one thing that we're really looking at trying to do and push forward in the coming seasons. I think the other thing we learned and absolutely loved is it was fantastic to have the men's and women's championship at the same location. Fortunately, you know, Cary, North Carolina, that whole organization at the Wake Med Complex stepped up, and they were fantastic as far as hosting both tournaments at the same location and being able to pull all of those off. And I thought you saw it last night, not just in the semifinals from Thursday and Friday, but even the final last night was fantastic. I thought the women's game was really special. Florida State is fantastic. It had some really, really smart, and Coach Kerkorian and Coach Smith, their tactical chess match that they were having throughout the game was really unique and fun to watch. And a lot to take from that, and, you know, disappointed that it had to end on penalties, but it was very entertaining in my opinion. And then the men's game, absolutely. What a Cinderella story for Marshall, and what Coach Grassi has done there. Did a fantastic job to put their team in the right. And I thought they were the better team on the night, to be fair. I thought Indiana was very organized and solid defensively, but Marshall was, we say this a lot as a team, is the, within our team, within our program, is the game favors the, you know, the ones that are brave and the teams that are, you know, show courage. And I thought Marshall showed a lot of courage, showed a lot of bravery and sticking to their game plan and ultimately winning it. And the crowd, the fans for both games was really special. So I think the opportunity to put that on a national stage with great fans and a great environment for all four of those teams was really special for both the men's and the women's.
Yeah, it was phenomenal. It was a great atmosphere, very electric. You know, it says something in terms of how else could the college soccer season be completed in the year of COVID than two, you know, non-Power Five teams, you know, winning the national titles, right? In pretty dramatic, you know, fashion. I think really for me, the only, if I had to nitpick at something in terms of the support of the tournament, I would say, I think maybe, and I don't know who this falls on exactly, but my understanding is ESPN is one of them with the big platform that they have. I think more games could have been more easily available to watch, right? There was a lot of confusion, you know, through going through the rounds as far as, hey, where do I go? Where do I go? Where can I go? Where is this? How come I can't find this? So yeah, I think if I had to nitpick at something, I would maybe say that. But otherwise, it was phenomenal. It was phenomenal. Yeah.
I agree. I thought that was a lot of my colleagues on both the men's and the women's side was you have a really special stage there that it could be able to put us in a situation to where we can really showcase our sport as much as possible. And we potentially dropped the ball and potentially didn't take advantage of that. And again, like you said, is that NCAA? Is that ESPN? But hopefully, even as much of maybe they dropped the ball or didn't do as well as they should have in that situation, hopefully this year showed them that there's a massive market for it. And so for future years, you hope that, because that one of the things that we're talking about in our expansion model that we're even looking into was creating an environment where instead of it, the College Cup just being the Final Four, is how can we do it where it's actually the Elite Eight? Can we have more teams? Because I heard talking to a lot of coaches, G. Guerrieri at Texas A&M, another handful of other coaches, Brian Lee at Rice even, that the special, unique environment for them to have so many teams all in some of the same hotels, like men's and women's, was really special. And it would, to be able to bump into, G was talking about, to bump into Coach Yeagley, you know, from Indiana, or to bump into the, you know, men's pit staff or whatever it was, to be able to share ideas, mm-hmm, was really special and unique. for men's teams to support the women and women's teams, obviously, to support the men. So that was definitely really special.
Yeah, I hadn't even thought about that. Yeah, that's a good point. So you talked about Coach Gossi out at, you know, at Marshall, and in 4 years' time, he took over a program, you know, losing record, turns them around, and here they are 4 years later, national champion. So clearly what he had to do, heavy lifting on the culture implementation side. So as we segue here, Coach, that's kind of a perfect model, right? A perfect case study, if you will, in terms of my question for you, I guess, also is, you know, expand a little bit on your perspective, what you've been able to implement there at UTSA. Like we said, you just wrapped up your third season in terms of your team culture, your recruiting, you know, your core values. I know you implemented you created a new crest, but kind of the team culture, the foundation, the core values, what have you found has been the best way to implement that, particularly there at UTSA?
Well, I need to call the Marshall staff and figure it out, because they had it fast tracked and did a phenomenal job. And so if we can even remotely be half as good as that, I'd be happy going in here into our fourth year. But I appreciate the question. And I think the big thing is, for me, this is my third go as a head coach, third school being a head coach. I've been fortunate at both of my previous stops, Arkansas State and Idaho, to have limited success, but have some really positive impact. And at Arkansas State, I start there only because I was a very young head coach, newly married. It was 13 years ago, you know, and I was just like, you know what, I'm just going to get in here and grind and burn the midnight oil and we're going to just win with effort and elbow grease kind of thing, you know, and we're just going to do whatever we can to outwork people. And at that time in the Sun Belt Conference, we were, you know, I was taking over a team that had only won one game the previous year. So it was like pretty much, hey, we nowhere else to go but up. So, but it didn't happen overnight. We had to really, I would say I was very naive in that first head coaching gig, just because I knew what I wanted and wanted my team to be a blue collar, gritty team, just because that's who I am as a coach. But just getting everybody to buy in was a challenge. And it wasn't until my third year there that we finally broke into the conference tournament, had an upset of Western Kentucky in penalties in the quarterfinal round, and eventually lost in the semifinals to Denver, who's very good and still is. But I knew at that point in time, I still had a lot to learn. So that's why I stepped away from being a head coach at Arkansas State and went to being the assistant coach at Gonzaga and working for a very good friend of mine, Amy Edwards. And she was a great mentor, learned a ton under her in my 4 years about that it's not just about wins and losses. It's more about the relationships, the connections, the opportunity to teach and ultimately inspire your athletes to be better than they were the day before. And I took a lot of things from her and learned a lot of things from her. And I was able to then turn around and implement that at the University of Idaho. And the very first thing I did at Idaho, which is exactly the first thing I did here at UTSA, was we sat the team down and we had a series of meetings, probably 6 or 7 1 to 2 hour meetings. It was just about who are we and who do we want to be? And that was the gist. And we just kind of sat down, we talked about, okay, who are we? What are we currently known for? What do we want to keep? What do we want to get rid of? What is the good? What is the bad? And how do we sift through that? Okay, let's keep the good. And what is that? Okay, now who do we want to be? And then ultimately, how are we going to get there? And so through a series of those different conversations and, you know, arguments, discussions, debates, you name it, we were able to kind of at Idaho and then ultimately doing the same thing here at UTSA. I'm a firm believer that, yes, I can walk in the door as a coach and say, hey, we're going to be A, B, and C. But if those players don't buy into that, then that doesn't, regardless of those are the best core values you could possibly lay out for a team, if those players don't buy into that, then that's not going to work. And so I'm a big believer in bringing the players into the process so that they can take part in what we're trying to build and what we're trying to ultimately become for the future. And so that out of that, that is where our core values came from. These are not core values that I walked in the door and said, this is who we're going to be. I obviously, through various questions and discussions, I had an influence in how that some of that was shaped. But ultimately, it was our players at the time. What do we want to be known for? Who do we want to be? And what they came up with was ultimately our three core values is team first, or what we oftentimes refer to as family. But just team first. Everything we do is for the team and the success of the team. Second being grit. We want to be known as a physical and mentally tough team that shows courage. One of the quotes that we have within our team, we talk a lot about, is a Mike Tyson. And I think somebody else may have said it before Mike, but he's probably most well known for it, is everybody has a plan until they get punched in the mouth. And so it's just kind of that thing that we're not going to back down from anybody. We're not going to be afraid to compete with anybody, regardless of who that is. And we're going to show courage in doing that. And then the last one being integrity, which is simply just do what you say you're going to do. If you're going to show up on time, show up on time. If you're going to come and give us your absolute best, then do that. And it's evolved a little bit since then. But ultimately, what we're trying to do is we're trying to recruit high character, high performing athletes that are consistently chasing growth every day. I would say that is our number one goal. We want high character individuals that are in line with our core values of team, grit, and integrity. We want to have high performing, high talented individuals that are willing to chase growth. Because we're not recruiting the perfect athlete here to UTSA. We hope that we can, but they've got to have that high character and they've got to be willing to be consistent in their performance and, you know, bring it every day. And if you do that, then, you know, that's a coach's dream, and we hope that we can continue. And that's what I genuinely feel that we've built our foundation on here and what is propelling us forward. Because every day, if we lose a soccer game 1-0, like the game I described to you, we outshoot our opponent 14-1 and we lose on a penalty kick. Did we play with team first mentality? But did we show grit and toughness? Did we show integrity and preparation and accountability and how we went about our day? And if we do those things, we can hold our head up high and say, you know what? All right, let's go back to the drawing board and let's get better. Let's look at our tactics. Let's look at our training. How do we improve so that we don't have that happen again? Because that's ultimately where we're trying to measure ourselves. Those aren't just words on the wall. We talk about it every day in training. Are you being a team first person? Are you showing grit and toughness? Are you showing integrity about how you're preparing for your day and doing what you say you're going to do? And if you're doing those things, then we feel that the results will take care of themselves.
Right. Great stuff. Coach, one of the things I noticed about you, and it was kind of further cemented in our conversation that we had last week, is you don't, unlike many coaches across many levels, is you don't give the parents the Heisman, right, so to speak. You don't shun them at a distance, right? The social distancing from parents at all times. You kind of incorporate, you communicate with them, you reach out to them, and you involve them, and you engage them in the program. And I know one of the things you hit on me that I wanted you to expand on also is kind of communicating that message to them early that, hey, it's allowing at a very, very early stage in those very first couple of months for those freshmen, right, is allowing your child to fail, right? That's kind of an expectation and a standard almost, right? Expand on that a little bit, Coach.
Yeah, I would start with this. Through the recruiting process, from the time we start to get to know the players, you know, we've identified them as talented individuals that we want to recruit. We then begin to immediately start to pay attention to how does that student athlete or that prospect interact with her parents? How does that prospect interact with their club coaches, their teammates, et cetera, those character traits that we're looking for as well. And then as that process goes on and we can start the conversations and the communication with those athletes as they, you know, right before they're going into their junior year, we'll typically have a Zoom call or a phone call with the, you know, prospect and begin to talk to the athlete about our interest in them, what do they have interest in, so on. But we're quick to bring the parents into that conversation. And then ultimately, if we're able to get in front of them, get them on campus on a visit, so on and so forth, what I just told you about our core values, what I just told you about who we are as a program, is that begins day one in the recruiting process. So we start talking about it. And I've had so many conversations with athletes of just saying, like, please do not come to UTSA if you are not in line with our core values, our character traits. Because if you're not willing to put the team first, if you're not willing to show grit and toughness and being, you know, a person of integrity, then like, let's like stop that process here. Now, that may sound crazy, but the thing is if I'm going to be coaching this individual and recruiting her for the next couple of years and coaching her for 4 years, 5 years of their time, I don't want to be butting heads with that athlete the whole time while they're with us. And so we bring the parents into that conversation. And because we do want to be as transparent and as honest as possible about what this is. This is a Division I college soccer program, and our goal is to win championships. Our goal is to compete against Conference USA champions, Rice, North Texas, Florida Atlantic, all these teams. We want to be a top 50 program in the country. That is what our aim is. And it's not an environment where everybody plays. It's not the club environment. You know, we only travel maybe 22 of our 30 athletes. So there's 8 to 10 kids that are being left home every trip when we go out of town. That's not easy for some people to swallow. And so to your point, what you're talking about is as after a commitment is had, usually in the spring, in fact, we just had this conversation with our incoming 2021 parents. We got on a Zoom call with them and we just really started to talk about like, hey, refresh their memory. We talked about this in the recruiting process. You guys chose to be a part of our program. Your daughter chose to be a part of our program. So now we talked about it, but again, let's refresh our memory on what this looks like. And so one of the things that we talk about is knowing the parents are heavily involved in the process. I welcome those conversations. I think there are some coaches out there that, like you said, keep social distancing from parents, if you will. And listen, there's some parents that I never hear from, and they are very professional about it. It's my daughter's job to come in and speak with you as a coach. But there's some parents that do get upset. I think the biggest thing for me to help them understand is we're not against each other. We actually can be for one another and support their daughter in her pursuit of success on the field, off the field, all of those things. And so there's times when, yeah, I've had conversations with parents, whether it be over disciplinary situations, not to debate it, but just to bring them up to speed so they're aware. The big thing is we try to encourage parents is please, if your daughters, we talk about the very, and I stole this from a friend of mine who's a very, very good colleague of mine and gave me this idea, is like, let's openly talk about the first call home. Because at some point in time, there's going to be a phone call. It could happen in preseason. It may happen middle of the season. Who knows when it's going to happen, when their daughter is going to call home to them and they're going to be frustrated. They're going to be upset. The coach yelled at me at practice, or I'm not getting the playing time I want, or I'm not and my teammates, I'm struggling with my teammates, whatever that is. And so we talked with the parent openly about this, is when that phone call happens, you have two choices. You can try to justify and coddle your daughter and try to place blame, whether it be the coach, teammate, somebody else's fault, or you can genuinely encourage your daughter to step into those difficult conversations with me as a coach or a teammate or a trainer or whatever the situation is, and try to resolve and come up with a solution. Too many times we talk about this within our team. If you have a problem with a teammate, don't go and talk to your roommate and complain about it, right? Like go directly to the person, have a conversation, sit down. Why did you say this? Why did you do this, et cetera? That's how we come together. That's how we stay together as a team. There's no room for kind of talking behind each other's backs and those types of things. And it's for the parents as well. I do not expect every parent to agree with my decisions, who I play, my tactics, things that I do. I get it. But what I hope a parent never does is question how much I care for my athletes, how much I want to genuinely see them be successful and how much I want to inspire them to be better. That may equal playing time. That may not. But know that everyone on our staff genuinely cares about every single one of our athletes, whether it's the starting goalkeeper or whether it's our fourth string goalkeeper, whether it's the starting defender or whether that's player number 30 on our roster that is, you know, that just practices with us and hasn't had an opportunity to see time on the field. We care about every single one of them, and we want every single one of them to be a person of high character and ultimately, you know, chasing growth and chasing the opportunities to get better. Some parents understand that and some people struggle. But I'm not afraid to have those conversations because I would rather bring them into the process so that we're all on the same page. We may agree to disagree, but I would rather us all be on the same page so they know where I'm coming from. And ultimately I know where they're coming because every parent, I'm a parent. I have two daughters. You know, I get protective as a dad. You know, we all do. We want our kid to have success and happiness and all of those things. But we have to be willing to allow our daughters to fail. We have to be willing to allow them, because if we don't allow them to fail, if we don't allow them to go through those struggles, then I'm robbing them of life skills that they will have to know when they get fired from a job or boyfriend breaks up with them or whatever the situation is, or they fail a test, whatever it is. I have to allow them to fail and help them take accountability and know, well, you failed that test. Well, maybe you didn't study enough. Okay, well then how do we work into that? How do we get better? How do we keep improving? You got fired from that job? Okay, well, maybe that door closing is another opportunity. It's gonna come up. What can we learn from it and what can we do better? Instead of trying to place blame and point fingers at people. And so, you know, that's very important for me because I think that's also part of my job as a college coach is to not just win soccer games, but ultimately, hopefully through our environment and the opportunity to have within our program, they grow as people and develop these life skills that will benefit them for many, many years to come.
He's Coach Derek Pittman, head women's soccer coach at UTSA there in San Antonio. Coach, you know, as you're talking, I was getting the visual of that diagram. I'm sure you've seen it. Illustrates is kind of two pictures side by side with success, where what everyone thinks, right, that straight vertical line versus what it really looks like, which is a hot mess in all kinds of directions, squiggly all, but it ends up in the same place, right? Yeah, that's kind of the visual that I got. That's well said. So here's an interesting one that I have for you is you talked about buy-in, right? And buy-in particularly in a year like this, what it's been like, especially the fall and not knowing and kind of as a coach, being able to be comfortable with saying, I don't know, right? Because as coaches, that's not how we're wired. We're wired to get answers and solve problems, not say, I don't know, right? But did there come a moment, particularly in a season like this, where you really, was it like a definitive moment in terms of the buy-in across the board within the team, or was it just each week, little by little, one player here, one player there? What was your assessment of that in terms of the buy-in of the team because this season was so unique?
That's a really intriguing question because I do think it was little by little. I don't know if there was a defining moment. I think we had some opportunities for some defining moments. Lost 3-2 to Rice in our opening conference game, and we were up 2-1. Had some unfortunate luck with our center back going down with a orbital fracture after a header, you know, changed some things. I think we had some other moments on the road and some other games, and it did feel it was very incremental, unfortunately, not I guess massive as we would have liked it to been, but I do think that a lot of the things we've likened the process to this. And again, most of the things I have, I steal from friends of mine, but the whole idea of if you've ever built a house, if you've ever been through that process, I fortunately have, or I should, maybe I should say unfortunately, because it always takes longer than you ever anticipate.
Yes.
And it always costs way more.
Literally going through it right now.
Yeah. And that's the thing is like, and I think just helping our players understand that in this environment that we're in, it was never going to be easy. It was always going to be a challenge. It was always going to be difficult. And, you know, coming here, I knew that a lot of what we needed to do was an overhaul. I knew that in some regards, we had to rip the house down to its studs, if not all the way down to the foundation, and kind of build it back up. And so I've said this to my staff a number of times. I feel like we've got the frame up and now we're trying to put the drywall up or whatever. And we are all having all sorts of electrical issues. You know, it just seems like it's one thing after another goes wrong. And as for the parents out there who might be listening, it is that process. It always just seems like it costs a lot more than you ever anticipated or budgeted for. And it takes way longer than your timeline. And so that's, I use that analogy because I do think that's a little bit of what we experienced this year. It wasn't pretty. We didn't have these massive moments of all of a sudden, you know, that the house is, you know, it starts to look like it. It feel like it was very much difficult, hard, mundane work this semester to progress. And I'm extremely proud of our athletes for grinding through that because it wasn't pretty at times. And there were difficult moments. I want to say it made, you know, that aha moment in a lot of ways didn't come until we beat UTEP at the end of the season, which was the first time in program history for us to knock off UTEP. And
it was all over the place here. I'll
get you one. Yeah. Congratulations. It was exciting for us. Yeah. And although it wasn't our ultimate goal, which was to make it to the conference tournament and compete for a championship, it was a step forward that we hope to use as we move forward into next fall, that we're pointed in the right direction and our players will be able to take that success and keep moving forward.
Great stuff. I knew at some point you'd get in the UTEP shot. I knew you would. I'm just kidding. No, very happy for you guys. Congratulations, coach. I know that's big. That's how it shows up, right? Those
sure, little, absolutely.
Yeah. So having just come off the spring season, getting ready to enter summer, and how are you and your staff preparing, or how have you prepared, I guess, to handle basically what's going to be the shortest off season of your career, right? Because you go right back, 100 and something days, right, before you get going again.
Yeah, it's quick.
Right. How you know, give us a little bit insight in terms of just the preparation. We know June 1st is right around the corner, right? Recruiting period and whatnot, but not just on the culture side, but in terms of the anticipation, the preparation for, here's another piece that you guys have never really seen, is such a short off season. How have you all prepared so far?
Absolutely. We definitely, knowing how long it was in the fall and ultimately what we did in the spring, we told our players, listen, the month of May, the rest of the month of May is all yours. Take my May off. And we told them, like, listen, you need to be mature about it. If you know that your body needs to, for some of the players that maybe didn't play a whole lot of minutes, hey, you know what? You need to try to keep your training going and keep your fitness up. For some of them that played a lot of minutes, we kind of just said, listen, this is your opportunity to recharge. Literally go hiking, go do hobbies, go do whatever you want. Spend time with your family, do whatever. And then on June 1st, we'll start back up with our summer plan. And we're very scientific about what we ask our players to do from a periodization standpoint. So we have certain distances and meters and intensities that we want our players to start building up into their workouts in June. And so we've already started laying that out with our strength coach, where we want them to be by the end of June, where we want them to be by the end of July, without overtraining them and really kind of building them up into that and what that looks like. We've already had I mentioned a Zoom call with our 2021s, how excited they are to be joining us and you know, jumping on campus in July to be able to ultimately then start preseason camp in August. And so there's definitely been a lot of planning from that sense. We're definitely planning on the recruiting side of things. You know, the fact that we haven't been recruiting in probably 15 months is crazy to us as far as just leaving campus and being able to go watch live youth games. Although we tried the whole virtual online deal, which was great for a little while, and it's nice. Some tournaments did a very good job of that. Some didn't. It's still so difficult to tell on video and on a live stream versus being able to see them live. So I know our coaching staff is just itching on June 1st. And I think my wife is itching for me to take a road trip and get out of her hair here. We joke all the time that the recruiting trips is what keeps our marriage together. So I can go away and she can get rid of me for a short period of time. I'm very fortunate. My wife played college soccer and gets it and understands it. So those things, how we're preparing from a recruiting standpoint and ultimately what we're looking like in June and July. But then we're also, to your point, is really starting to look at August, knowing it's going to be a short period of time as far as coming off of the spring and ultimately into the fall. We want to be very specific. We want to be very detailed in what our goals are, what our objectives are when August 3rd rolls around, because we literally have about 14 days before, you know, your first regular, you know, I think our first practice is on the 3rd. Our first countable game is on August 19th. So you got about 16 days to implement what you want to, as well as having some exhibition matches built in there to get some game fitness up and be able to try some things. We've got 10 new freshmen coming in. We'll have a great roster of players returning and players coming in. And so we're ultimately in those 16 days, not only trying to implement things technically and tactically, but you're trying to do it as well from a team chemistry and culture environment and get the group to be cohesive in their efforts of plugging away and doing the best they can on the field and working together. So lots to be doing. So we're trying to be as efficient as we possibly can with our time in planning out training sessions actually now, so that we're not trying to do it on the fly, at least for the month of August, to try to have everything mapped out as much as we possibly can as we kind of work into the first part of September and ultimately get ready for the conference season.
How's that fall 2021 schedule coming along? Is it just about wrapped up?
Yeah, it is. It's getting close. We are still, unfortunately, waiting on Conference USA to finalize some details. As you know, we went to divisions, East and West Division, back for this past spring. And so we only played everybody in your division. And so we're trying to increase that. We're trying to make some adjustments to it. We should know, hopefully, in the coming weeks. But as far as non-conference games are concerned, excited. We open up. Our opening weekend is at Oklahoma State's tournament. We're playing Oklahoma State and the University of Tulsa, which will be really great because Randy Waldrum is bringing Pitt there as well. And so it's kind of a Tulsa reunion because Colin Carmichael at Oklahoma State, the Tulsa staff, we all coached or played at Tulsa. And then having Randy come back, bringing Pitt, and myself bringing UTSA, it's really a unique opportunity to bring kind of our Golden Hurricane crew.
He's coming off of a historic season there as well with the women's program. So
he's done a phenomenal job at Pitt. Him and his son Ben have done a really good job. Luckily I don't have to play them. So, I mean, not that Oklahoma State's any easier. They just went to the Sweet 16 and lost to Texas A&M. So, that'll be a great opening weekend. Then we have a couple games at home. I believe Cal Baptist and Grand Canyon are coming in. And then we have away games at Corpus Christi and Texas Tech. So we'll be coming over to Lubbock to play against Tom Stone and his staff. And then our last weekend before conference play, we have Lamar and Houston Baptist coming into a tournament at our place. We're excited about it, looking forward to it. I think that's a good slate of games that's going to get us ready for Conference USA, and which is an extremely tough league for sure.
Right. So, coaches, we start wrapping up here with our first segment. What has you the most excited about this upcoming fall season?
Honestly, I'm really excited to the group we have coming back. The fact that we only lost two seniors, the crew we have coming, I think the lessons that we learned from this spring, again, and I touched on it there towards the end of the season, some of the soccer we were playing at the end of the year, I'm really excited to be able to bring the team back together and have the opportunity to work on that cohesiveness and to be able to get us pointed in the right direction. The work that our team has been putting in, the work that our staff has been putting in, I think this really could be an exciting breakout year for our team and what we have coming in. I think the players we have coming in from a freshman, but also the returners we have, to know that we literally are returning our entire starting lineup from the spring and adding a number of other pieces to it is really exciting to know we're taking the right steps forward.
Right. It's well said, and well said, Coach. All right, Coach. Well, hey, I understand you're going to stick around with us for our next segment with Counterattack. And for our listeners, don't go anywhere. We'll be right back with Coach Pittman. And welcome back to the 50-50 podcast presented by Physical Athletics, our proud partners, Physical Athletics. You can find them on all social media platforms at Physical Athletic, that's FYZICAL Athletic, as well as on their website at physicalathletics.com. We are back with Coach Derek Pittman, head women's soccer coach at UTSA. Coach, so we got you for Counterattack. We got you for a second segment. Are you ready?
Yes, sir. That's my favorite part of the game. Counterattack.
Absolutely. We'll see if you still have the same energy when we're done with this one. All right. All right, Coach. First one out of the gate. Any training session or game day superstitions or rituals?
Ooh. Actually, as
a coach, not as a player.
No, as a my kids, when we would at halftime. They started this back in 2019, it's been a new tradition, I guess, is they go and buy Skittles at halftime, and they always find me right after my halftime talk to bring me Skittles. So maybe that's why our record's a little better at home than it is on the road, because they don't travel with me. But that's been kind of a unique little thing. They always seem to And in regards, to be honest with you, even as intense as a game can get, it just kind of brings a little smile to my face, right. A little bit of perspective. And I think my players enjoy it, that maybe I'm not as laser focused and intense at time. So
Right. All right. Next one for you. Emojis. Are you an emoji guy? Yes or no?
I am. Yes. Yeah, I do. Yeah.
Most used emoji.
Most used emoji. Probably the laugh face. Yeah, that's probably my wife's probably the poop. There's you know. Maybe that's how she's talking to me.
Oh wow, that'll be if I ever get to meet her when I arrive in San Antonio, I'm gonna let her know.
There you go.
Yeah, all right, that's awesome. All right, so last book you read.
Ooh, I am currently reading Pep's Man City book. I made my way through that series of books. And then I just got today in the mail, Tim Grover's, I can't wait to dig into it, but Tim Grover's new book, Winning. He wrote Relentless, and then just came out with his second book, Winning. All of his time with Kobe Bryant to Michael Jordan and some of the top athletes that he works with. I'm excited to be able to touch into that.
Favorite one. I'm guessing you're probably like me, probably a pretty extensive reader. Favorite book you've read since the start of the pandemic last year. You have a favorite?
Yeah, without a doubt. The biggest one I would love is Legacy, is the,
The New Zealand rugby team, right?
I love it. To be honest with you, we've even had some of our players, a lot of our leaders read that book. And that's what we're trying to emulate. That's the hope, is that we can create some sort of, you know, culture, environment, legacy, and you know, in what we're trying to do here at UTSA.
Absolutely. That's, I love that. Love that one. favorite. All right. So here's one that kind of ruffles some feathers a little bit. Favorite, least favorite soccer team.
Ooh. Well, yeah, that's easy for me. And my most favorite is Manchester United. I've been a Manchester United fan for a long time. I was a huge Peter Schmeichel fan. I've read everything on Sir Alex. Just love the culture in there. So, and then I've been digging tons into RB Leipzig and some other stuff that's going on these days, and happy that Jesse Marsh got that opportunity there. But at least favorite has to be Manchester City, because I'm a United fan. So, or Liverpool, either one. But I do respect their coaches. I just cheer against them every chance I get. So,
you know, I asked when Coach Waldrum, Randy Waldrum, was on here, I asked him, he said the exact same thing. And I almost pulled the plug and just ended the podcast on the spot, you know, when he said Manchester United, because he thought only thing of, because I knew what was coming. I knew Liverpool was coming. So that's me. So, yeah.
Although, I mean, I am a massive Klopp fan. I love how he is on the side. I love his style of play. Honestly, his man management, even how he's handled a lot of things that have gone on there. He's done a fantastic job. So I respect the coach. I just don't cheer for the team. So.
Right. Of course. all right. So you are we create a new position, right? The president, ambassador, king of all soccer in America. All right. That's you. That's Coach Derek Pittman. That's
scary.
What's one thing you'd change in the game in America today, if you were appointed that position?
Probably promotion relegation. I'd find a way to get some promotion relegation going in here in the MLS somehow, some way. Cause I do think that I think that ultimately changes the game and changes the passion.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So like promotion relegation, because I just love how, I mean, the Portland, the Atlanta United, just the fan support in the local small towns, I think it is also super cool. Obviously that you get more in Europe than you do here, but it's growing, it's getting better. All of those things, hopefully we're continuing to make strides forward for sure.
Right. All right, Coach. So a couple of soccer questions there. And we're going in one direction. So now here comes the counter. All right. Completely different question. Strangest thing in your refrigerator right now?
Ooh. I have no idea. I don't get in there very often. I would say probably some old guacamole. So.
All right. Yeah. Okay. Next one for you. A bucket list destination, someplace you and the wife or you and the entire family, before it's all said and done.
Sure. Wow. That's a good one. I would love to go. I have never been, but I would love to go to Germany to just visit and travel all over Germany. I've been fortunate enough to go to England, Scotland a couple times. But to be able to go over to Germany and tour around some of the old cities, and be able to check that out would be. And I keep telling my wife all the time, I've been fortunate enough I've gone to a couple Manchester United games, but just to be able to take her over to Europe and be able to catch some Premier League games or some Bundesliga games, something like that would be tops for sure.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Germany was awesome. I got to spend a good amount of time there on Uncle Sam's dime, so yeah, you'd love it for sure. I got to play a good bit, got to play some semi-pro there too, which was awesome. It was, you talk about an opportunity of a lifetime. It was great. All right, Coach, next one.
Yep.
Favorite Netflix series or other show that obviously I'm sure you've been able to binge watch during the pandemic. What's been the favorite Netflix series or other series that you've been able to binge watch?
Yeah, no doubt. Has to be Ted Lasso. Oh. Dude, Ted Lasso has been like, honestly, it was not only the funny things that we talk about, but one of my favorite quotes that I'd never heard before until I watched that was his moment in the bar when he's playing darts against Rupert, and he quotes Walt Whitman, "Be curious, not judgmental." And honestly, that quote alone has stuck with me through everything through the pandemic, just in the sense of, you know what, I don't know everything. I'm an imperfect human being. I have strong faith in Christ and in my beliefs, etc. But the bottom line is I don't know what you've walked through as a human being. I don't know what other people have walked through as a human being, and showing that empathy and genuine curiosity to learn their story and not pass judgment has been massive for me. So not only was it a hilarious show, and I can't wait for season two to come out, but it was also the depth of the story was also fantastic.
So, you know, not only do we have the same great style and hair coach, but obviously great minds think alike, because for me, that's been kind of the surprise hit for me this entire time. And because I know, the kind of genesis of how Ted Lasso started, you know, the commercial, the NBC promo, what, 7-8 years back, it was a joke, right? It was a joke, right? And we all had fun with it, and then when all of a sudden, all these years later, it transitioned into an actual series. Okay, everybody was going to be like, okay, let's see how this goes. Let's see how corny it can be. But as I've told a few people actually on the podcast, is it really surprised me, because you knew the humor was going to be there, but along the way, it captures you, it captivates you, because it has heart, right? There's like some serious heart in that series. So yeah, I'm excited. I believe, I don't know when in July, but I've seen trailers for July. That's
okay. I don't think I had seen. And the funny thing is, the person that put me onto it was my pastor. he was like, him and his wife were like, have you seen Ted? I was like, no, I don't know what you're talking about. My wife and I binge watched it in like 2 days.
It's phenomenal. Yeah. There is a, and I can share it with you, but I retweeted early this morning, I retweeted it was a retweet or a comment with a retweet, I think it was, of the part of the cast. I don't know if you saw that yet.
I saw Danny Rojas.
Yeah, they were at the Chelsea Leicester City match. And I was just like, oh my God, wow. And yeah, I didn't see it till this morning. So that was,
I saw it right before I jumped on with you here. I thought it was hilarious.
It was great. It was great. All right. So next one, coach, that you can share. Okay. What's been the funniest moment in training or a game that you can share?
In a game. honestly, game. Well, practice. I had one in the fall. We film all of our practices, and so we pick up bloopers on a regular basis, and we usually, through those, you know, series of bloopers, we put together a blooper reel at the end of the semester and laugh and joke. So there's been plenty when it comes to the players. But there was one particular moment. We had been working on this exercise for probably 20 minutes. And normally I'm pretty it's kind of a counterattacking effort with some recovery defenders and trying to get our players. We do a lot of stuff where it's very much we're defending. And once we win it, we say, you know, okay, you've won it. Now what? Like, what is your mind already thinking about? I'm going to intercept this pass, or I'm going to steal, you know, take this ball or pick up this knockdown. Do you already know what you're going to do beforehand? And we had been training it, working on it. And one of our top players, Abby Castle, our leading goal scorer from this year, she just was having a bad day, and she made the same mistake like three straight, and they catch me on film. I had a hat on that day, and for some reason I just threw it down on the ground. I was like, very emotional, very dramatic in my own right, and so yelling at Abby, but the way the camera caught it was just hilarious. And I'm literally going, you look like such an idiot, dude.
You just need to insert the Titanic song maybe to finish it off.
Absolutely. I would just oh my gosh. So so that was probably one of the best ones. I've had a few other moments.
I'm sure the team enjoyed it, right?
You played they just start when we showed, well, and the thing is, I didn't even know it got caught on film. And Carl, who gets all of our training film, had cut it And the next day when we came back to watch film with the team, he inserted the dot at the very end of it. And they were all just rolling. And I'm just like, seriously. so we do a lot and try to make fun of ourselves. And
right. That's awesome. Good stuff. All right, Coach. Final question. All right. Okay. So the pandemic's officially completely gone. You got family coming over, family from out of town. You have friends, what have you. Big Sunday dinner. You're the chef. What are you cooking?
Oh, steak. So just give me a big couple big ribeyes. Usually we marinate them in Worcestershire sauce overnight, put a little bit of, you know, salt and pepper seasoning, and I grill those out. I'm a big fried okra person, so we'd probably have steak, fried okra, corn on the cob, and my favorite dessert. Well, it's in between, but probably some sort of apple pie with ice cream, you know, something really good. So, yeah.
All right. Awesome. Well, Coach, this is, you know, this has been great. Before we go, any final words, final thoughts, final words, final thoughts that you'd like to share with our listeners? Obviously, we have listeners not only across the state, you know, high school coaches, college coaches, student athletes, parents, but really across the country. Any final words, final thoughts you'd like to share with them, as well as any, you know, upcoming info, camps, anything of that nature that you'd like to share?
Yeah, I think the big thing for me is the excitement that's going on at UTSA. Not just within our soccer program, but I think as a university as a whole, as well as our entire athletic department, we've broken ground. In fact, we're due to move in here in July, brand new athletics facility. Our Roadrunner Athletic Center of Excellence is a $40 million facility, 90,000 square foot academic center, weight room, training room, nutrition center, you name it, coaches' offices. With, you know, turf field, grass field, just that piece alone. I just think, you know, for a long time, UTSA, you know, 15, 20 years ago was just viewed as a commuter school. And the vision and the passion that our president, Dr. Amy, and our athletic director, Lisa Campos, have for where they want us to go and how we're going to get there is super exciting. That is one of the biggest things that attracted me to coming back, not just to, you know, this area of the country, but to San Antonio, the excitement around the sport and the excitement around the university. There's a lot of really positive things going on in our athletic department, and our soccer program is one of those things. And so, you know, just that opportunity for people to take a look and take a peek. And I think there's going to be a lot of really great things that continue to go on in UTSA and for many, many years to come. As far as camps and stuff, unfortunately, we're still working with the university on what that looks like from a, you know, post-pandemic piece. We hope to be hosting maybe some ID camps come in August, maybe around some of our training or maybe around an exhibition match. So we can be on the lookout for that. And that's at UTSASoccerAcademy.com. So we hope to be making some announcements there. But yeah, I would just, you know, encourage anybody that wants to see kind of an inside look into what our program is about. Follow us on Instagram. Follow us on Twitter. UTSAWSOC is kind of the UTSA Women's Soccer page. A lot of exciting stuff that we're trying to create, the culture that we have, and ultimately the quality of soccer that we want to continue playing and winning as many games as possible. So, but other than that, Hector, I really appreciate you having on. This has been absolutely fantastic.
Well, I appreciate you being on, Coach. I really do. And I know just your level of communication, transparency, it's greatly appreciated, you know, by myself and us here, the 50-50 podcast team. And I look forward to being able to come out sometime, open training session sometime. And,
absolutely.
Pester you some more. Pester you some more. So maybe I can match you and slam my head on the ground as well. So we'll see.
Yeah, right. I try not to do that. But the team will definitely laugh at me.
So. And I am looking forward also. I am looking forward to being able to see one of your incoming freshmen play that I got to work with and train a little bit back in my previous San Antonio days in Helene Ferris, coming in out of Smithson Valley.
Yeah, so. We're very excited about Helene. Yeah, unique situation there. Her graduating high school early and coming in as a 21. She was originally a 22. But yeah, we're excited. She's doing a great job this summer, and I think she'll be a tremendous addition. She's a very talented young lady for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, Coach, we sincerely appreciate this. We appreciate your time. We're grateful to have you on. You definitely were tremendous, and we look forward to having you in the future as a reoccurring guest. Maybe, you know, obviously the 50-50 podcast is headed to San Antonio. So maybe another future episode, we'd love to have you on. Thank you. And for our listeners, again, thank you. Thank you for your time. Thank you for your continued support. Obviously, we talk about we continue to grow. You can support us. You can find us on Instagram at the 50_50 podcast. You can also find us on Twitter at 50_50 pod. You can find us on YouTube as well. Make sure you subscribe. And then as well as we're very happy to announce that, like we've said before, we're being listened to in 9 different countries. So for our listeners, thank you. We do it for you. And until the next time, keep downloading and keep listening.